I'm never
Hoimy
deleting
Craft.
This. I'm never.
Redstone with B-dubs.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Dork Depot, episode 10.
10!
10 episodes in 4 years. Nailed it. I think only like 2 years. I think only 2 years, really, but really just a year, which is like one a month.
Yeah, you've been doing it.
I've been doing it. We've been doing it.
We've been doing it now. Wait.
Hey, how you doing?
Wait a minute.
Wait a minute. We're talking about D&D today.
More
this
D&D.
Is... easy as
one, two, three.
Simple as do, re, mi. I got you.
A, B, C. Okay.
Yeah, no. No. No, do you want to keep going? I don't want to stop you.
The entire song.
Yeah, just, I think we're doing a karaoke episode. 100% my idea. So the Dork Depot kind of came a fruition of talking about dorky things. And let's be honest, there isn't anything dorkier than playing and running D&D. I think we all know that. And the first few episodes, which I think were my most fun to talk about and record, were the Baldur's Gate 3 episodes and the D&D episodes, and then specifically the D&D versus Baldur's Gate episode was one that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, I enjoyed listening to them.
So, well, I'm glad you did. We decided we were going to do a D&D episode together.
Yes.
Because I think I've been in one campaign without you.
Yeah, we've done most of ours together.
Together.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we've always been in D&D campaigns together. And we've got a upcoming D&D campaign coming up, hosted by yours truly. So I'm going to be DMing for you,
yep,
Dordan, Orby, Darido, Godo.
Yes.
I was going to keep it to four players, and then I felt bad Godo got the short list there because he's DM'd for us several times. So felt like in the spirit of helping one DM to another, we had to roll, get Godo to roll a character.
Absolutely.
Bless his little crackly crab heart.
Crackly crab. Well, I think it'll be fun with the group of us. I think we were lacking in some... what's the word? Like, just party in general. The party was lacking a little bit, and I think him being added into it is going to be, like, perfect.
Yeah, it takes a lot of pressure off of me as a DM as well.
Yeah.
Because balancing around four player characters when two of the players are relatively new and one of the players is Dordan makes it a bit tricky. And then your guys' comp, while I'm not critical on, like, there has to be a specific comp.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it's up to the dungeon master to balance the game around what your players are bringing to the table.
Mm-hmm.
There are some things that it's like, you kind of need this, and you didn't have it. Now you do. Godo rolled himself a very, very meaty, tanky fighter for you guys. So,
which is perfect. That's exactly what we needed.
Yeah, so I think that's going to take a lot of pressure off. Jordan's playing a half-caster. He's playing an artificer. Obviously, Starido's playing a rogue. You're playing a sorcerer.
Yep.
And Corby is playing a monk, which is pretty versatile. I'm curious to see. I don't really have a lot of experience with monk at a table at all, so I don't really know how it performs
at all. I've never played with a monk. Yeah.
Yeah, it's notorious for not being very good, but I know they've made some changes, so we'll see.
I'm excited. It's going to be different. I've also never really played a sorcerer. I played magic casters, but not a sorcerer. So that'll be interesting too.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like sorcerer and wizard is a really interesting set of classes because on the surface, they seem very similar, but they actually play very differently. Mm-hmm. And I would say that there are pros and cons to each. So
agreed.
I hope you really enjoy it. Obviously, I think anybody that knows anything about D&D, especially 5th edition D&D, early level casters are a liability. They are notoriously weak. You have very few spell slots. If you get into multiple encounters in a day, it could be very detrimental. Late, mid and late game, like level 4 or 5 on, spellcasters are broken. They just outright deal the most damage. And once they start getting a lot of spell slots and they could just start flinging spells to their heart's content.
Fireball!
Yeah, just it starts getting out of hand. So D&D, I think we wanted to do an episode kind of on D&D for new players or maybe players that are... I think there's a huge uptick in people that want to get into D&D because of Baldur's Gate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who are nervous to do a D&D session and they're not sure what it is they're going to have to bring to the table.
Right. And I feel like half the battle is finding a group too.
Like, I would say that's more than half the battle.
Yeah. I would say that is the battle.
That literally is the battle.
Yeah, trying to find a group to play with, I think, is the hardest part. Luckily, like, we were fortunate to have a bunch of friends who are just dorks and like D&D and enjoy it and have three DMs in our, like, friend group. So that's really helpful. But I get the nervousness behind trying to find a group. There is a lot of, like, places to do so. An example would be, I know a lot of card shops will hold like D&D, but I know that can be scary for someone who's like doesn't know any people, you know?
Yeah, it's I think the overwhelming majority of D&D players are very welcoming.
Yes, absolutely. Are
very patient. They love teaching new players. They love having new players at a table because new players will do things like once you've done D&D, once you've played D&D for a while, you kind of get set in your own ways, whether you mean to or not, where a new player might sit down and be like, oh, can I do this? And we'll come up with something totally radical and inspire a whole party like, oh, my God, I never thought of doing that. Or I never thought about, you know, that kind of interaction or that way to interact or that kind of character idea. So new players are like the lifeblood of D&D. It is unfortunate when a new player gets into a session and it's a disaster or they have a bad DM or they have a bad table.
Right.
And I think that's some of the stuff we wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
Is like just the importance of finding a good table, making a good character, not good in terms of like performs well, but that you enjoy playing. So
yes.
Nerdy, what do you think some of like the biggest misconceptions are that a new player would have going into D&D for the first time or wanting to learn D&D? Maybe they're just sitting down at YouTube or D&D Beyond and trying to figure it out.
Yeah, I think the big thing, like going into it, people get really worried about the like role playing aspect. A lot of people get worried, like they have to make this entirely new like personality in themselves and have this really fantastical like voice and all this stuff. And that's just not true. If it's your first time, you don't have to do any of that. As long as you make a character that is well-rounded and that you are like happy with and want to play and will enjoy it, I think that's the biggest thing. You don't need to be crazy. Like if you watch Critical Role, you don't have to be
that. Yeah, you don't have to be a paid professional voice actor. And I know Critical Role gets a bad rep for that, you know, where a lot of people are like, oh, the Matt Mercer effect. I don't think what Critical Role is now is a good representation of D&D. And the reason I say that is Critical Role is designed to be an experience that is enjoyed by others.
Yeah, entertaining.
Entertaining. And, yeah. Where D&D just needs to be enjoyed by the people at the table.
Agreed.
And I think in order to keep Critical Role fresh, they create a lot of homebrew and a lot of radical concepts that might be really confusing or difficult to wrap your head around. And you don't need all of that. You don't need props and voices and all that stuff to roleplay. You can roleplay entirely in your voice, in your own clothes, just by playing your character the way that you wrote your character.
Yeah.
So when you're making a character, Nerdy.
Yeah.
Where do you start with your character create? Like, do you come up with like a race you want to play or a class or just like, do you have a character idea?
It usually depends. Like, I know sometimes I'll have like an idea of like a character personality in my head, and then I have to kind of put the race and the class together after that. But most of the time I look at the races and I look at the classes, I put those together, and then I come up with a backstory afterwards. I'm big into backstory building. I love writing. So that's a big thing for me. And Goat knows this because I can write up a real fast backstory.
Literally having Nerdy as a player, as a DM, is so rewarding because as a DM, when you're making a campaign, especially in this upcoming campaign we're doing where it's all homebrewed, for the most part, I should say.
Right.
It's critical to have ways to get a character invested into the campaign. If you're just a person kind of operating autonomously in this world, you know, it can be fun if you enjoy role-playing scenarios or you enjoy combat, but it's hard to be invested. Where when you have a character that comes to you and is like, hey, you know, here's my character, here's what my backstory is, you know, here's some traits about my character, some quirks that I want to work around, and then gives you like, here's some things that I want my character to find out that I'm giving to you to create. And they share that, and you have a vested responsibility as a DM to make that rewarding for your player, because they are giving you, in like the case of Clementine, there's some pretty big liberties you're giving me with Clementine's background.
Yes.
Of what Clementine is going to find as she goes on this adventure.
Yeah. I mean, like, I had a basic idea of Clementine, what she is and her personality and most of the backstory. And I just like, for the future, it's like, yeah, it should be directed by the players, but it should be conducted, you know, by the DM, you know?
That's a great way to word that.
Yeah. Like, I gave you, like, one of them was Clementine wants to find something later on in the I'm not going to spoil it, but find something later on the campaign. And I'm having him choose when that is, where it is, like what happened to the thing that she's trying to find. Is it gone? Is it somewhere? Like, is it near her? Have they already seen each other? Like, I'm having him control that entire part of it.
So excited.
It's so exciting.
Yeah. So I think the start of a good character is your backstory, for sure.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
There are, so like in our campaign, I've got three of you so far who've given me a good backstory. Our two newer players haven't given me as much, which I think is very common for new players. And that's okay too. I would rather, if you're unsure of what you want to do or how to do a backstory, I'd rather you keep it vague. You can always add stuff in later. People don't need to know. You don't need to have every part of your life fleshed out, you know, for if your character is 30 years old for 30 years. You could just give me some very rough guidelines and we can, on the fly sometimes, fill things out. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I wanted to kind of talk about when making a character and making a character for you versus making it for your party, and kind of talk about planning with your party. And I've talked about session zeros and how important they are.
Yes.
We typically don't do proper session zeros. Everybody kind of comes up with their characters individually and just brings them to me, which I'm fine with. But there is a lot of advantage when all the players that are going to be in the campaign can sit down together and kind of shoot off of one another, because you can sometimes create storylines that are entangled. Or there's like relations. I don't think you need that, but it is an element of a character that you could do.
Yeah, kind of. I know some people in past campaigns have wanted to like come into the campaign together. So that could be, you know, that's something that's happened before. So I think a session zero would be important because of that. Some people do want to start the campaign together as if they already know each other.
Yeah, we did that with your guys' one shot, right? You and Corby?
We did.
You guys were brother and sister.
We were,
in the one shot, which was a lot of fun.
It was fun.
I mean, even though it was just a one shot, but...
Right. And then, like, lucky for us, a lot of us already hang out most of the time already.
Yeah.
So needing a session zero wasn't super necessary because we already all talked about our characters together and what classes we are and how we're going to work that together. So that made it easy. We didn't really have to do it. But if you don't know the party super well, I think, yeah, session zero is, like, needed.
Yeah, I think session zero is super important, especially if you're playing, like you said, with people that you don't play with often. I think just to establish some ground rules for everybody is important. Mm-hmm. I know what you guys are comfortable with in terms of role-playing. I know, you know, what scenarios are going to make you uncomfortable in a good way and uncomfortable in a bad way. You know, I know where I could push to sell a point if I want to make somebody apparently a terrible person. I know how to do that without making it unenjoyable for the players at the tables to have to listen to like a description of something.
Yeah.
Versus like I could sell a point that is like, oh God, this guy's a fucking scumbag without giving anybody like a need to go book a therapy session. helps, but like people have different ground rules. People are, you know, and you could be, I'm okay with, you know, maybe like you're a player, you're like, I'm fine with like romance and being romanced, but I'm not okay with non-consensual romance or something like that in a campaign. Yeah. That might be a very hard line for me. You know, if you have like a real phobia of, let's say, spiders, well, it would be really shitty of your DM to make you constantly fight spiders if you're genuinely or like super uncomfortable around them. Right. So being able to talk about those ground rules, like what I like, you know, what I'm okay with, really will make a good campaign. Because once you start getting into those campaigns where you're like the subject matter of the campaign is bothering you, you're going to have a really hard time having fun. And it could be non-intentional on the DM's part. Like this is just what they prepared. And now they have to like scrap a huge section of campaign for you because you didn't communicate, you know, what it is that you were comfortable with or not comfortable with, or you guys didn't have a session zero. So,
right.
And then additionally, you guys can talk about, I think the other really big thing is alignment. If you want to play a lawful good paladin or cleric or any character, but those are usually your really commonly lawful good. You want to play like a lawful good Azmir paladin, like the holiest and righteous of player characters you could possibly roll up. And the rest of your party wants to play like a thieving band of rogues. Might not be a very good fit.
No.
You know, and we've actually ran into this before in one of our campaigns with my paladin Vondel and Kaylee's character where we had... very differing opinions of some scenarios, and it kind of caused some problems until we got them worked out, which, you know, we were able to do because we're friends. But if you're not friends, that might be a really hard bridge to cross or repair. So I think as long as you sit with your group and kind of plan everything out a little bit, I don't think every detail has to be like meticulously planned. It goes a long way in just making sure everybody has fun and cohesive and one character doesn't step on another character's toes, you know?
Right. I feel like making sure everyone has a turn to say something and do stuff, especially if you have a big party, because we've played with big parties. And sometimes it can get a little overwhelming to try to get a word in, especially if your character's supposed to be talkative and you can't get a word in. That can be really hard. Or if your character is supposed to be super goofy and you can't get your goofiness in.
Can't get the goofiness yapping in. Oh, no.
Yes. So just like, just making sure everyone gets a turn. Everyone gets to like say what they need to say. I think that's really important too.
Yeah. And I think we can actually kind of touch on that towards the end. I feel like that's kind of a good thing to talk about there. So when making a character, I think every good character is memorable. Wouldn't you say like a memorable character is being memorable for like being unique, I think, is way better than being memorable for just being strong.
Agreed. Like anyone can be strong.
Oh, so unprofessional.
So sorry.
Oh my God. After all the audio testing. So I think there's, I don't want to say there's a wrong way to make a character. There's not. But I think there are ways that are better than other ways to make a character. I think is the nice way to put that. And for me, it comes down to a character with quirks.
Yes.
And I feel like if I go to a new player, I'm like, hey, what makes your character unique? I think a lot of the default stuff you'll get is like very surface level. Like, oh, they have a fake eye or they have a tattoo or a scar. Like, it's real generic kind of tropey stuff. And right. That's fine.
Yeah. I feel like what you want is something that's going to make them like, having a look is one thing, but you're not going to look like your character. Your character's looks isn't really coming into play, while the way they may talk or say something does. Like, that's where it becomes unique, or the way that they like do a certain thing in the game makes them more unique.
Yeah, and I think the more, I think one, having an interesting quirk on your character or a flaw or a habit, one, if you're uncomfortable with role-playing, it gives you a catalyst to role-play.
Exactly.
It gives you something that you can do with your character that makes your character unique, that the rest of the party kind of has to role-play around. You know, I think even having something like maybe a limp or...
Oh, okay.
You know, like maybe like a quirky, like one arm is like distinctly shorter than another. something like that that's kind of weird, or maybe like one knee doesn't bend. Maybe you always keep one hand in your pocket and you can come up with a reason why that just actually never mind, don't do that. Godo, don't play that.
That's dangerous.
Yeah, maybe okay, maybe not a good idea there. But just something that, you know, if what well, you know, like to touch on that, if I'm the DM and I have a shopkeeper who maybe is inherently nervous of getting robbed all the time, and you have a character that like will not take their hands out of their pockets, it might make for a nervous exchange that you wouldn't get otherwise.
Oh, yeah.
You know, something like that. Maybe it's a, you know, maybe it's not to make it too real world, but in its own way, I think racism is a trope that happens frequently. In D&D, you might have an elf that, you know, doesn't like tieflings, or a human that doesn't like gnomes or something like that. You know, and maybe your character is that race. The shopkeeper is the other one. And now they're nervous about you just because. And now you have this weird, you won't take your hands out of your pocket scenario, or you don't make eye contact, or you won't, you know, whatever like quirky thing, you know, it could just give you something to role play.
Yep.
I don't know. Do you have any other like ideas or thoughts on that? That
yeah, I mean, there's some like visual, yeah, physical quirks that you can do that are like that, you know, like walking weird. Or I'd say even someone who has really crazy, like, I know, like, fake eyes and tattoos. Yeah, they're not like the biggest, they don't really help. But a big one could be, this person has like the craziest big hair in the world and it gets in the way of everything.
That would be
like,
awesome. That would be hilarious. It's just like constantly catching on doors and stuff.
Yep. And there's like sticks in it and sometimes it drops in their soup, you know, like stuff like that. That could be stupid and just fun and funny.
Yeah.
And
that would be hilarious.
Really goofy moments.
And you've done a really clever thing with Clementine. If you want to talk about Clementine's appearance.
Clementine's appearance?
Yeah.
Well, she's a cat.
Yeah. So
she's a cat. So yeah. She's literally a cat that is on her hind legs, standing up straight, and she's like 2 foot tall at most, you know, domesticated cat, basically. So she likes all the things cats like. So fish is a big thing with her. That's one of her big quirks, is that she loves fish and she'll do anything for fish. And would she turn on her friends for fish? Who knows?
Who knows?
who knows? Like, she loves fish. All she wants is fish, and she also really likes fire. So there's two things about her personality that
but just
loves.
The fact that she is a bipedal cat is going to be hilarious, because that's obviously going to create great like moments goofy. With people that are allergic to cats, that are afraid of cats, with dogs. With people that love cats, with children. Kids, it gives so, as a DM, it gives you so, because all your job is as a DM is to bullshit your way through enough things until you come up with what it is you need them to do because you were ill-prepared, or them eventually finding the very obvious breadcrumbs you have left them because your party is a bunch of renegade assholes that don't pay attention. So you're constantly just killing time until they figure out what it is they need to be doing. You could tell that I relate to that. So having a character like Clementine is amazing. That can create, that's going to create, I already have so many scenarios.
I love it.
That's going to be a lot of fun with. So you have that. But I think the better quirks are the ones that are not necessarily physical, but are a personality trait.
Yes.
And I'll give you some examples from some of our campaigns. Kaylee played Lily. I've talked about Lily before. Lily was a spastic gnome that adamantly had to lead the party, would throw tantrums if she was not the physical leader in walking from place to place, but had the worst sense of direction.
So
that is such a great, that's like one of my all-time favorite character quirks, like just a character that gets lost all the time.
Yep.
It's harmless to an extent.
Yep.
It doesn't rain on the party's parade because they can try to corral her.
Yep.
But it creates a lot of funny scenarios and funny dialogue. And then Dordan had Bolt, who is a warforged. So you're talking about a robot, essentially, with no palate, that wanted to be a chef and loved to cook for the party. And we actually homebrewed up a D100 table for him where every outcome was different on what he could, almost every outcome. There was a handful that was like no effect, but the rest were like, it could be good for the party, it could be detrimental.
Yep.
And he actually fed some of his food to an owl bear that he was trying to tame, buffed the owl bear, and then failed the animal handling check on like the second time around. And you guys had to fight this buffed owl bear because Dordan buffed it on accident because of what he rolled when he cooked the food.
So goofy.
Which I think is great. You could have, you know, like personality things. I thought of one where a character, no matter what it is, when they pick up their drink, they have to finish it in one sitting. Like, every drink gets downed. They don't.
Immediate chug.
Yeah. Just like they go to like, you're at the tavern celebrating or like talking to the bartender to get information. The second they touch their whatever's in their cup, they have to drink all the way. Like, just stuff like that can create really funny moments. And then the other one that I still kind of want to do, and I don't, maybe I shouldn't have even told you about this, but I love the idea of a character that thinks that they have the spell speak with animals, but don't. And they just confidently talk to animals and relay bad information to the party. They're like, yeah, the rat said that the third door on the right is where the bad guy is. But like, they just are delusional. They can't talk to animals. I think that would be a hilarious, hilarious character to roleplay.
That is so funny. That'd be so fun to like just play with. Oh, God.
Yeah. And it would even be better if there's like another druid in the party that does have speaking animals. And they're just like at constant odds about it. Or like don't want to break their heart.
And they're like, oh, that's not what they said. Sure.
And then, like, you're trying to find ways to get the right information to the party without upsetting
the other person. Their feelings.
Yeah, like, without hurting their feelings. I think is great.
That's funny. I like that idea.
And then the other one I thought of last night, we were watching the anime, we were watching Mashal.
Mm-hmm.
I love the idea of a wizard that's, like, statted in the wrong way. You just have, like, a wizard with, like, 20 strength, uses, like, gets feats for like heavy armor user. like just refuses buff. To, yeah, just like this ultra buff wizard or vice versa, like a fighter that has like no strength.
But has like and, so much charisma or yeah, something. Yeah,
like takes, because just... there's like feats that give you cantrips, you know, from other spell classes and stuff, like ritual caster or something. I love the yeah. idea of doing something like that. You could even, I bet you I could come up with like a D&D version of Sasuke for you.
No, you don't gotta do that.
You sure? Because I could, no. I could no, do that.
Could do a version of Jiraiya.
What would Jiraiya be?
Just a pervy motherfucker.
He's like a druid, right? You were gonna play Jiraiya?
Yeah, pervy
like
sage? Yeah.
Yeah, like a frog based druid. Yeah, see, there you go.
He talked to froggies.
That's like constantly trying to peer into like women's bathhouses.
Restrooms, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Restrooms and stuff. Yeah, that'd be great.
No, I can't all play it. Okay, next there campaign.
Go. There you go.
Character made.
Yeah, if Clementine dies, there you go. That'd be so. I don't know that I can kill off a cat. You might have given yourself ultimate plot armor there.
Honestly.
I'll have to polymorph you into something else.
To human.
Polymorph you into a human. Can you polymorph into a human? I guess you could.
I don't see why not. Huh.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm also wondering how disguise self is going to work on you.
Oh, true.
It's going to be a lot of fun. We'll figure it out. So there's that. But I think we agree. A fun character, way more like entertaining than a meta character.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I would rather make a character that's fun to RP and has, like, thematically the spells that I want than just, like, rolling a character with, like, the best possible.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's... If you have fun playing a character who's just stupid strong, that's cool, but give them something else to it, you know? Like we're talking about personality trait that makes them just, like, stupid or goofy, you know? Like, it's not super fun just playing something who's just gonna dump truck on everyone.
Yeah, I played a human variant fighter in a Pathfinder campaign, one that you were in, that... Mm-hmm. Was a very strong, I rolled really good stat numbers, and I just kind of, I built a very meta-y character, but I made him overly arrogant. So did make him kind of quick to like rush into bad scenarios. That was my way of balancing him a little bit, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
But I never felt, I liked that character's concept, but it never really clicked with me the way other characters have, that weren't as strong, but were way more fun to RP.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I base a lot of mine around. It's like, what do I want to play? What do I want to have fun with? Even if, whether it's a spellcaster or a rogue or anything, it's like, well, how are they going to be fun? How am I going to make them fun? That's all I care about. Them being strong is the last of my worries.
Yeah. And I think that's important, right? Fun is a different thing for everybody.
Right.
And then I think the other thing that I really encourage new players especially is to stay away from the really cliche tropes, or as I affectionately call it, tropes that suck.
Tropes that suck.
Yeah. You know, the dead parent trope drives me crazy, or the dead. I think very specifically, I've never done a dead parent character with the exception of one character who had one death, but that was more pivotal to the backstory, and we could talk about that character a little bit later. Mm-hmm. But the, like, I don't feel like every adventurer has to have a tragic backstory.
No, absolutely not. I don't think I ever had one who had a dead parent. Like, I get that trope can be just old. I feel like a lot of people, that's their go-to when they want sad backstory. Yeah.
It's like, oh, this person killed my parents and I'm out for revenge. It's like, okay.
Okay, Sasuke, calm down.
Yeah, okay, Sasuke. My brother killed my entire family. but did he? Yeah, it's just, it's such a cliche. If it's really what you want and you're really not comfortable writing backstories, I get that it's an easy one to fall to. I think, like, the brooding rogue as well, speaking of Sasuke, like, every rogue, every new player that plays a rogue plays a rogue that always has a hood and like sits in the corner of a tavern with like their arms crossed. It's a Dorden.
So my first character. Yeah. Which I loved, but like I think her first character too. Yep.
Was a brooding rogue.
So I get it. You know, that's what you think of when you think rogue is like edgy. So I understand that, but yeah, it can be old.
Yeah, pulling anything from like Lord of the Rings, you know, pompous, conceited elf, archer, drunk, loud dwarf warrior, you know, I think all that is kind of tropey.
Very tropey.
It's not that there's not a place for it, but I think there's ways to maybe we could do a whole episode on this where we homebrew some characters.
Ooh.
And just come up, like we each take a trope, like three tropes each, like common shitty ones, and then liven them up. Yeah, like.
Okay.
That might be fun to do.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, is there any other tropes that jump out at you that are like stay away from or?
I think the dead parents was like the big one. That's just such a common thing. And if you struggle with backstory, I know I've used some, I'm usually not a person to advocate for AI, but there is some like AI backstory generators where you just put in, like, let's say cat who has a human conscious backstory, and it will type out a whole backstory, and I wouldn't copy paste it, but you could base something off of what it gives you. Like maybe it'll give you something absolutely fun, you know.
I think AI is an interesting one. That's another thing we could talk about for probably 10 hours. But I think the concept that you're getting at is, you know, pick and choose and borrow. And, you know, you don't have to copy, but you could draw inspiration from other things. The entire basis of the campaign that we are running is drawn from something that.
Yes.
Like, I know intimately I could draw off of it, and it gave me a ton of the inspiration for the landmass, the way the land is set up, the way that the ruling families are set up. Like, all of that is drawn from something. It's not a one-for-one copy. I actually added a whole other region and split up the way that it worked. And, you know, I tweaked it to be unique to what I want.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, you can get, you know, like I said, from anime, from books, from TV shows, from movies.
Yeah, just any personality, quirk, anything of that sort you could grab and put it into your character and just make it a mix, a little bowl mixture of a bunch of your favorite things.
Yeah, there's so many different things you could do. There's, you know, and there's so many shows now with the popularity of D&D, you know, that you look at like Game of Thrones, you look at Witcher.
Yep.
There's a lot of like fantasy shows, you know, Vikings, Shogun are all big popular shows that you could probably get a lot of inspiration from.
Absolutely.
Did you want to talk more about role playing or?
I'd say we kind of touched on this earlier, but just making sure you guys don't feel forced to do any kind of voices. Voices can be a big part of a character sometimes. I know with Clementine, I kind of pitch my voice up a little bit and make her sound a little bit more chaotic. And you don't have to do that, but if you want to, you can. I know I've made a past character British. You've made characters who are almost, I don't know, like British Scottish kind of sounding. Like, which I love. I love when
that's called being bad at voices and trying them.
It's like a British Scottish in between that you do, which I like. I think it's funny and it adds to the character. If you want to do it, do it. Don't be afraid to do it just because the rest of your party isn't doing it. I think that's a big thing. I know we have a lot of first timers in this new campaign, and I have a feeling maybe I might be the only one doing a voice, and that's okay. That, like, you should be okay with wanting to do the voice, and no one's going to judge you for doing a voice.
No, in fact, in our first like major campaign that we were a part of.
Yep.
I mean, Vondel did not have a voice the first few sessions. I did not do a voice. I didn't feel comfortable. I was nervous to try. I was scared to do it. And then I started doing it, and then it was just the thing. Like, he was voiced all the time.
Yep. And I couldn't imagine him without the voice. Like, I don't even remember you not doing a voice.
Yeah, he did not have a voice at first. And then I think another thing, too, kind of talk, like, you don't have to change your voice. You could just change your cadence.
Mm-hmm. Or the speed and how you say it.
In which yep. you talk. You can talk slower and more deliberate, and now you're giving your character some life. Or you can talk a lot faster and a little more chaotically, and that's a, you know, it's a voice without being a voice.
Exactly. Or there's like vocal thing, like changes, vocal quirks too, because we were talking about quirks. There's vocal ones too, where maybe your character stutters, you know, like
a stutter, a lisp.
A lisp, yep.
A lisp, you know, is easy to do. You could have a character that repeats things.
Like, yep.
Either repeats what he hears other people say, or I think of like from Goodfellas, Jimmy Two Times, where he's like, I'm going to go get the papers. Like, I'm going to go get the car. Like, you could do something like that. You could do, you know, whatever. It doesn't have to be a voice. It could be a pattern.
Yep.
And you could try it and go, oh, I didn't like that. And change, like, you're not beholden to it once you do it for the rest of the campaign. You can try it out. And you could go online. There's a lot of resources on it. Maybe you get really into it and you're like, I want to learn how to do some different voices. There's a bajillion YouTube videos on changing your voice, so.
Voices, accents. I had to look up how to say certain words in a British accent, like for one of my characters. Same with a Russian accent, because my one shot with you when we were on vacation, how do I do a Kiga. Russian accent?
Yeah, Kiga. And what was Greg or something, was it?
Chuck.
Kiga and Chuck. So funny. Oh Kiga my God. Great. Kiga the Great, yep. And her brother, Chuck. That was one of the best. I love that. That was one of the best set of one-shot characters ever made.
It was so fun.
Speaking of past D&D experience, that segue.
Look at you.
Hey, it's like we planned it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We're getting the hang of this thing. What are some of your favorite moments from past D&D experiences?
So I wrote down one, and this is one that I remember because it was so stupid, but it was so... It was memorable because it was the dumbest thing you could do in D&D, which is I did my first bang-in with my bard. I played a bard, of course, and bards are like, you know, they're charisma based.
Talking about tropes, by the way, your bard doesn't have to fuck everything.
Mine did. And I did my first banging in 10 towns with my bard Silver with a barkeep. And I will never forget that. That was so stupid and hilarious. And I got information out of him. I got what I wanted.
Yeah, that was that was a moment for me too. Remember, bard players, for every creature you seduce, you're making your DM have sex with you. Okay.
Yep.
And
No regrets.
There's only so many times. I'm not a piece of meat, okay?
You are in this campaign.
God. That was a thing. That was a great... Okay, actually, I forgot about this. But Jordan desperately trying to get into that room.
Yes.
Spending so much time trying to break into this room, never being able to get in. And then you being able to get in one shot because you seduced the bartender.
Easy.
Yeah, and then finding nothing, by the way, was the best part of that. There was nothing in there. I like those moments are great. There is a shared moment I know that you and I
yes
want to talk about. I knew when we were talking about like what we were going to talk about that you were gonna talk about Skippy.
Yep, Skippy and our first campaign we played together. I think, how many characters did he make? Because
he
they
made
just kept
three
dying.
Three characters, yeah.
Three characters, because they just kept dying, because he would just run off and do something himself, and then immediately die.
The first death, I think, was the best.
Yeah.
We were in an abandoned dwarf fortress that had been overrun with undead. Mm-hmm. There was a banshee, and there was a bunch of ghouls. And we... opened up a door and there were a ton of ghouls inside. And I was playing Vondel, which was my Oath of the Ancients paladin, that I built this entire character around being able to be a human meat shield.
Yeah.
And that is exactly what I did, because I could stand in the doorway. I had high AC. I had a lot of health and I had lay on hands. So I could just heal myself every turn a decent chunk. I had cure wounds.
Yep.
I had potion. Like, I could sit there and do that while casters and archers threw shit over the top of me, kind of whittled down the numbers. What does Skippy do? Skippy goes around to the other side, opens up the other door that was in there that the ghouls weren't going through, because obviously ghouls are like very singular minded. They see, they attack.
Yep.
He's a bard, by the way. I want to quantitate this a little bit.
He was a bard.
He was playing a bard. Walked in, got surrounded by ghouls, absolutely got smoked and torn apart. And I remember we didn't help him because we all had wax in our ear.
Oh, yeah, because we couldn't hear him.
Yeah, we couldn't hear him yelling for help around like the backside of the room, because we had already gotten hit by the banshee whale and we were trying to avoid that happening again. So we had all melted wax candles down, put wax in our ears. So Skippy was like screaming for help and none of us would leave where we were to go help him. Because we felt like it was metagamey to just like, I'm going to randomly walk around here and see what's happening.
Right.
You know? Then he had a Minotaur Barbarian?
I don't even remember that, so it couldn't have lasted that long.
That was the one that died to the Aboleth.
Okay, yep.
Him and Orianna both died. We rezzed Orianna. We had one res scroll. And we let Skippy die because we're like, hey, he's already died before. And yeah, then third character, I think he dropped out of the campaign shortly after. I don't think he was having a good time. Which just happens, twice, by the way, when you keep dying because you treat things like a video game.
Fair. Yep.
Yeah. What other ones did you have? Any other memories or moments?
Those two are my big ones. Did you have any more?
I think going back to that Aboleth fight.
Yeah.
So it was Tower of Mad Mage. We probably had no business fighting the Aboleth, and we did anyways.
Why not?
But we had split up.
Oh, yeah.
And you, Orianna, and Skippy's character went. Or actually, I think it was just Skippy's character and Orianna went.
Yeah, we were behind. You, me, and Dordan.
Me, and Kaylee.
Oh, Kaylee.
Dordan wasn't in. Dordan took Skippy's place.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So me, you, and Kaylee stayed back. They took the only boat down the river and steered it right to the Aboleth's lair, proceeded to get wrecked, as you would expect two lower-level characters in an Aboleth lair would.
Yep.
Then your character went to go check on them.
Mm-hmm.
And then me and Kaylee's character played tic-tac-toe.
Yep.
In the sand while the three of you were getting murdered by an Aboleth. And then we decided to go and check on you guys. And I was in plate armor or half plate armor. And I didn't have a way to take it off and bring it with. And you guys took the boat. So I was like trying to acrobatics check my way across this cave.
I remember that.
And I had part of my character's development was learning magic from Orianna. So I was a level 2 sorcerer with my, I think it was like 6 Oath of the Ancient levels or whatever I was at the time. I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wild magic, and it was me burning spell slots, trying to get some effect to happen. And I was like, all that I need to not happen is not roll I think it was like a 4.
Yep.
I was like, I just can't roll a 4. Because that was the grease spell on yourself.
Yep.
And sure as shit, that is exactly what I rolled. I greased myself into the river in full armor. It was a disaster. The whole thing was a disaster.
Oh, absolutely.
That was like the worst thought out plan you could possibly have in a D&D session. But it's why it's so memorable now.
Right.
I could still look back on it with fondness.
Yeah. It was stupid. Lack of planning, dumb decisions, but now
we
it's
lost,
like,
yeah, we,
hilarious.
We lost 2 player characters in that process. You were downed. We had to burn every major magical. I think we burned like all of a necklace, a fireball.
Yep.
Is what Orianna did, and sacrificed herself in the process. It was
It
was quite the show.
It was interesting.
It was a shit show. And then what about favorite characters? NPCs or PCs?
Yeah. One of my favorites was your Candlekeep NPC, Fembris. And he was this super, it was this one shot we did. And it was this guy who's he would like show us throughout the library, right?
Yeah. He was your adjunct, like trainee.
Yeah. And he was this like super nervous. Like he always seemed like he was on the verge of a panic attack kind of guy. And the voice you did for him really made it hilarious.
I don't even I vaguely remember it. And I don't know that I could do it right now if I had to. It was just like so manic.
Yeah.
And like high strung and like super sped up.
Very and crazy. And we hated him, but I loved him because of how much I hated him.
He was, I think, probably the most hated NPC I ever made. And not because he was a jerk or not because he was like blatantly evil or rude. He was so difficult to talk to and listen to.
Oh, yeah. He would just keep going.
Yeah. He would just trail off into like whatever the end of his sentence was also the beginning of a new sentence.
Yep.
And I would literally just like, I would take a huge gasp of air and then I would just like go until I could not breathe anymore until they interrupted me basically. And yeah, everybody in the play, like the whole party was ready to kill this NPC, even though all he was doing was helping them.
Yeah. We all wanted to push him through the portal.
Yeah. So that was a good one. That was a good one.
Do you got one?
My favorite NPC ever was Dorble.
Dorble.
Dorble, the mayor of Ten Town, or of Brennan in Ten Towns.
Oh, yes. Dorble.
Dorble. He would, like, friend hug everybody and, like, slap people on the back too hard.
Yes.
And, like, everything was, like, a lighthearted joke to him.
Very dad.
He was, like, very dad vibes. Yeah, I think I was really exploring my inner dad there. Dorble was one of my favorite. Coincidentally sounded exactly like Vondel. Crazy how that happens. What about you? What about some player characters you've had or played with?
I'd say even though she was a trope, I loved playing as Cell. Like, yeah, she was kind of an edgy rogue, but like she didn't know how to live her life outside of like the cult she grew up in. She was a bit broody, but she opened up over time, became a lot softer as a person because of the people she was around. She also had a quirk where she just loved buttons and collecting buttons.
That was a good one. Yeah, you would we would kill a thief. And of course, loot goblins that we are, everybody's like, oh, what loot do they have? And Dirty would be like, do they have any buttons on their shirt? And she's just like cutting buttons off of people's shirts.
And I had like a pail or like a jar that was full of buttons that I keep around with me. And it was like my prize, my treasure. And then we also had a pet mushroom named Mushy.
Yeah, you and Meg had Mushy.
Yeah, I loved Mushy.
Yeah, where did you guys get that from?
I don't know. We just wanted like a little pet mushroom.
Yeah.
Yeah, we found like the pot that we put up, I think we put a little mushroom in, and the pot was a magic pot that made things sentient.
Yeah.
And so it was a sentient mushroom that couldn't say anything. He just kind of sat there.
Yeah, he was like, we just had to carry this freaking thing around, power of mad mage, everywhere we went. It was a real burden to the party.
Oh, he was a cutie pie.
And that's another thing, too. I think it's important if you're going to have a character to be open to the idea of changing that character over the course of the campaign. It doesn't have to be a radical change, but Cell is a really good example. And Vondel in that same campaign where Cell over time became a little less broody and a little more trusting of her allies, as one kind of would when you're in life and death situations over an extended period of time. Because that was a pretty long running campaign.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Vondel was this like radically conservative, lawful good paladin that kind of started finding ways for the ends to justify the means to help his friends a little bit, where he wouldn't be quite so eager to do that, you know, at the start of the campaign. And I think that just feels like natural character growth.
Yeah, I feel like that's how real people work. People grow over time. So making sure you bring that into a campaign with your character, like how are they going to change over time? I think that's a really good way, going back to backstory, to make a good backstory.
And you don't have to know what that change is necessary. Like, I didn't go into that campaign planning on loosening up Vondel. It just kind of happened organically.
Yeah.
With what was going on. And I think as long as you're open to that, you can role play your character really.
Agreed.
One other character that I had that I really liked, and I didn't get to play very long, unfortunately the campaign kind of died off quickly, was Zuki.
Zuki.
And Zuki was a lot of fun. So it was actually a Pathfinder campaign. It was a 1.5, or I guess 1E Pathfinder.
Mm-hmm.
That we played Goto likes to DM Pathfinder campaigns, as Goto would. If you knew Goto, you would know that Pathfinder is, it sums him up well, overly complex. And Zuki was a Unchained Summoner, and Zuki was a kid, like 5 years old, I think, or 6 years old on this adventure.
Very little.
Yeah, like very young as a character to put on a D&D campaign. And we kind of, talking about like session zero and why it's important, we kind of had to iron some things out about how Zuki was going to work in the campaign. But it was a lot of fun, and it gave me Zuki kind of was a summoner that didn't really want the responsibilities, didn't really understand it. Zuki's Eidolon was like more his friend rather than this thing to fight evil with.
Right.
He was far more interested in collecting games and playing games. So that was another really fun one as well. I really enjoy playing Zuki. I wish Zuki might make a return in some other campaign one day, maybe. Ooh. Relived a little bit, but yeah,
I'd love to see that.
All right, I think really the last thing you and I wanted to talk about, nerds, is maybe just for the new players. We talked about, you know, making your character and role playing your character and how to get the most out of your character, but just maybe some general, like, what to expect in your first campaign or things you wish you knew about D&D that maybe it took you a few sessions to be like, oh, that's how that works, or how, like, a general principle of D&D works. Anything like that? Was there some stuff you had?
I'd say for, like, what to expect in your first campaign, I think a big thing is, if everyone is just starting out, like this is brand new campaign, everyone's just starting out, expect a little bit of awkwardness, and awkwardness is never bad. And if there's ever a quiet moment, don't think of that as awkward. It's just a quiet moment, and you can bounce off of it, or you can just, something fun will always come out of a silent moment. So don't worry about not being the loudest in the room or being the one to always crack jokes. Like, things will happen, and you and your party will become more familiar with each other over time, and it'll become more and more fun. So don't think if the first session was awkward, try it a few more times and just keep with it, and I think you'll have a good time.
I think that's really, really good advice. That might be the best advice you could give.
Yeah.
And it goes for even, like, our upcoming campaign, the first couple sessions are going to be slower. We're going to be using a whole new system in terms of, we're going to be on VTT, which none of us have used before.
Yeah.
It's going to be a big learning curve. There's going to be a lot of like, okay, hang on, let me figure out how to change scenes and bring you guys over and fix vision. Like, all that stuff, it makes a campaign feel slow at first. It makes a session feel slow at first. Stick with it. Give yourselves some time to kind of get the flow going, and you'll be surprised after two or three sessions how smoothly things will run.
Absolutely.
And I think that really is just solid advice across the board. Was there anything else that you had, or?
That was my big one. Do you have something?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple little things, and I think that really touches on all of it, but just don't be nervous or be afraid to ask questions.
Yep.
To get something wrong, to ask for things to be repeated, it's okay. Don't make a habit out of it because, like, you're not paying attention. Like, if you're on your phone, you're like, oh, what was that? Like, that's bad table etiquette. But if you just didn't understand something, or you don't understand how a system or mechanic works, like, maybe you don't understand initiative or something silly, whatever it may be, don't be afraid to be like, hey, I don't know where, like, you tell me to roll initiative and I click the initiative button and I always do bad and I don't understand why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's when your DM could be like, or another player, well, your initiative is going to be based off the modifier of your deck score plus any other additions directly to initiative you have. So you might not understand it. You might not understand how, like, where these numbers are coming from. Understanding your character sheet and asking questions about it is a good thing. So,
yes, asking questions. And I think another really big thing is don't slack on the note-taking. Note-taking is so important. And I did my first few campaigns without note-taking, and we'd come back to the session and the DM would say, okay, where did we leave off? And I was like, good question. And now anytime someone asks me, where did we leave off? I know exactly where we left off. I know exactly what happened. I wrote down everything. I wrote down every encounter, every person we talked to. Like, you don't have to do every single thing in the world that you encounter, but I like to, because then what if we see them in the future? Wow. Yeah. You know, I think it's important, and just note take, be the note taker. Someone's got to do it.
Yeah. Somebody in the party's got to do it. And you may not realize it, but that person is the DM's biggest asset.
Yes.
Because the number of times literally preparing for this episode and Nerdy asked me for the name of an NPC that we used, and I was like, I have no freaking idea. Like, there are names and there are things that happen that I'll come up with on the fly, and I don't write down, and I'm going to count on the note taker to probably have that information down the road if I missed it. So when they go back to a shop and they're like, oh, is that same shopkeeper here? I could look at that note taker and be like, hey, did you happen to write down the name? And you're like, oh yeah, I had it. It's this person. And this is like, oh, okay, cool. Thank you. It's okay as a DM to rely on your players to help you remember things.
Absolutely.
And as far as note-taking goes, however you like to take your notes, there's no wrong way to do it. I would just say keep things organized in a way that makes sense to you. For me, I have like general session notes, like what is actually happening, almost like video game bullet point style.
Yep.
And then I'll have a separate list of like NPCs. And this is just chronologically who we met in order, and like I might bracket off like a town, like NPCs 1 through 5 are in this town, and then here's like one random NPC we met on the road, but I'll keep them completely separate. Same with like locations. You know, if you're not sure if something should be a note or not, you could always ask your DM. They may or may not give you a reliable answer, but if you're like, hey DM, do I need to remember the name of this plant, the DM might say, no, it's common knowledge that this plant is poisonous. You would recognize it anytime you see it. So
yeah,
like you don't need to write it down. I'll remind you if it comes up again, because I know that your character would know that. Stuff like that.
Yeah. And I know like everyone takes notes different. I know I have a whole spreadsheet. I know you've seen my notes.
Yeah, they're amazing.
I have like an NPC tracker, which has the name, location met, their appearance, any notes on them, quirks. Same with town tracker, what shops are available. I have all that stuff written down. So, and if you don't want to do that, you don't have to. You can make your notes as simple or as complicated like mine as you'd like.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like note-taking for tests, right? There are
ways
you do it that work for you, and they may not make sense to anyone else, but just has to work for you.
Exactly.
I think the other really big thing to remember, especially if you're coming from like a Baldur's Gate background, which does an excellent job of capturing 5e, it is not a video game. Things are very fluid. Things can change rapidly. And there is not any, even with Baldur's Gate, there are still only so many ways an NPC can react. It is still like, it's linear in its design because it's a video game and you can't write infinite code. So yeah, okay, maybe there's 5 or 6 scenarios and, you know, 3 of them are the same.
Yeah.
Like ultimately end up at the same point in Baldur's Gate. That's not what's going to happen in D&D. And additionally, like you're not going to get away with rolling your way out of everything like you can in Baldur's Gate.
Yeah.
If you have really high charisma and guards catch you robbing something, you're not going to be able to talk your way out of that. Like, if you're blatantly committing a crime, things may not go the way you hope. And if you decide that your answer to that is to attack the guards, you may be cut off from an entire town.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like Baldur's Gate where, okay, this guard didn't see me do it, so I'm like in the clear. You know, it's like a totally different... If your information gets out there that you're a criminal or you did something criminal, your consequences are going to follow you for the entirety of the campaign.
Yes, your actions have consequences and there's no safes coming.
There's no safes coming. Whatever happens, happens. Whatever you miss, you miss. And then enemies in like situations are adaptive. So if you're like frontline tanky character with really high AC, if you just walk into a bunch of enemies, they are perfectly, if they're intelligent, they're fine ignoring you. If you're a caster and your answer is, I'm going to hide out in the back, they're going to target you. They're going to figure out, okay, this is a caster. They're the real threat here. We can ignore this guy in all the armor. We can't hurt him right now anyways, but he can't really hurt us either. Like, they're going to adapt to those situations. You know, a beast probably isn't going to do that, but an intelligent cult is going to. And I don't know, is there anything else that you had that you wanted to talk about in terms of like what you want now that we mentioned a few things?
Not specifically.
I think the only other thing I could say is those spells that look really useless aren't. I was really guilty of this, and it's, I think a lot of people are guilty of this in like Baldur's Gate. But there are some spells that you're like, I never use that in Baldur's Gate. Odds are it's got a purpose in D&D, and everything is possible in D&D. You could at least attempt everything in D&D. So if you want to try to use minor illusion to do something really unique, even if it's like out of the confines of the spell, your DM may let you do it. So, you know, really think outside the box.
Utility spells are super useful in certain situations. And you could make a, like we talked about before, you could make a character quirk with those utility spells.
Yeah, I mean, you could make a like a pacifist character that won't directly commit any violence. Like, you'll help your party defend themselves. You'll heal them. You'll buff them. You'll debuff enemies. You'll create illusions. Like, that could be a thing that a character does. It would still be a very useful character.
Yeah.
You know? So.
That's actually a good idea.
Yeah, it's actually a lot of fun.
Write that down.
So, there you go. D&D for newbies.
D&D for newbies.
Brought to you by Godus and Nerdy.
That's us.
Of the Dork Depot.
The Dork Depot.
3 episodes now.
I know. 10 episodes altogether.
10 altogether, 3 together.
So happy.
And we came up with like 5 others that we want to do.
Yep, we already have more on the list. So after I get my wisdom teeth out.
I was going to say, once Nerdy gets the holes in her mouth filled.
Yep, and I can start yapping again.
Yep. It's going to be so quiet this week without you.
I'll be bothering you guys anyways, like I usually do.
I'm going to DoorDash you food you can't eat.
That's fucked up. You'll send me like a hard shell taco.
Yeah, just...
I'll be like, God.
Get you like 5 pounds of rock candy from CVS or something.
I could probably save those, but like, damn, hard shell taco would be mean.
What's like the hardest food you could DoorDash?
Hardest food? Oh God, what would be? I don't know. Chips and salsa or something.
Chips. Yeah, that would be rough.
Yeah, chips. Like and salsa, really well done steak. Queso.
The way you like it.
I don't like it really well done. Just well done.
Anything past medium is really well done.
Fair.
You know what else is well done?
What?
This podcast.
Woo woo.
That's all we got. Love you guys.
Peace.
Hey, that's, you took my piece. Shit. Word.